No idea what trying involves, but I know I'm sure as hell not ready to give up on Jenna. Aubrey beams at me and squeezes my hand before letting go. That's the spirit. Now, you're staying for dinner, right? It'll be ready in 15 minutes. I don't even check my watch. Sure, I'd love to. Going home alone is the last thing I want to do.
Chapter 21. Jenna. This careful dance we've been doing, the texting and occasional meetups for sex, have been great, but I knew it couldn't last forever. And since I haven't heard from Emmett in a couple of days, I fear this might be the end. But then he called an hour ago to ask what I was doing this weekend, and when I replied, "Absolutely nothing," our plan was hatched. Which means I'm currently sitting alone in my apartment waiting for him to arrive. It's Friday night, and the sun has just set. My mood is a bit melancholy, and I feel so unsure about everything. As excited as I've been about the pregnancy, my feelings for the man who put the bun in my oven have only grown stronger with each passing week. Finally, a gentle knock on my door interrupts my sullen thoughts. I pull it open and find my baby daddy standing outside with a huge bunch of daisies wrapped in yellow paper in his hands. Yellow, the color for friendship. Why does that sting so bad? I take a deep breath and usher him inside. Those are beautiful. He hands me the bouquet.
I thought your place could use some cheering up.
He's right. The weather has gotten cold and gray, and there's snow in the forecast. Maybe that's the reason I've been down. Thank you. That was sweet. And they certainly are cheery. I head to the kitchen to fill a vase, and Emmett follows. I'd forgotten how much I've missed his warm presence, his scent. As I place the flowers in some water, I can feel him watching me. Are you sure you don't want to go out and get crazy? Go to a bar, maybe? I can't even drink. I'm totally boring.
You're my kind of boring.
Emmett's mouth curves into a smile, and he leans in to press a soft kiss to my lips. I level him with a serious look. Seriously, Emmett. He takes my hands.
I'm not some 21-year-old looking to get boozed up and laid. Actually, that last part was a lie. If sex is on the table, I'm all in.
This earns him a laugh.
But seriously, I'm almost 40. An evening in with some good company is my idea of heaven right now.
I turn from the kitchen, heading to the hall. I need a moment. It's not helpful for him to be so sweet, so sensitive, so attentive. It's not helpful for anyone. I might be fun now, but what happens when I'm 9 months pregnant and huge, complete with hemorrhoids and leaky breasts? Is Emmett still going to be around then?
Yeah, no, I don't think so.
Come here, I want to show you something, I say as he follows me. I lead him back to what will be the baby's room. It was a home office before I rearranged everything this past week. Right now, it's little more than a dresser, boxes, and a few overfilled shopping bags. But what I really want to show him is the paint color I selected.
What's all this?
A drop cloth covers the wooden floor, and 2 gallons of paint, along with an assortment of rollers and brushes, are scattered about. The color I chose for the nursery. It reminds me of the flowers you brought. When Emmett frowns, I ask, "You don't like the color?" He shakes his head.
It's not that. It's just, you shouldn't be painting by yourself, Jenna. The fumes.
I hold up one hand. There's a lot I'm going to have to learn to do by myself, Emmett. Single mom, remember? His frown relaxes and he nods again.
Right. Sorry. I didn't mean to interfere. But maybe I can lend a hand and help you paint this weekend.
Sure. Emmett peeks inside one of the shopping bags piled on the dresser.
You went with the gray and white.
He's smiling again. I nod. I thought I'd decorate with gray and yellow. It's safe for either gender, and if it's a girl, I can always throw in a couple splashes of pink.
It's going to look great.
He nods to the box containing the crib that needs assembling.
I'll get that put together for you, too.
I open my mouth to tell him that's not necessary. But Emmett shakes his head.
I figure I have at least, 7, 8 more months before you kick me out of your life? At least let me be useful till then. He chuckles like this absence in my life is funny instead of overwhelmingly heartbreaking. God, why can't we want the same things? On our way back down the hall, I stop in the kitchen and pick up a bottle of red wine from the shelf as Emmett enters the kitchen behind me.
What's that? He asks.
For you. He shakes his head.
You're enough, Jenna. I don't need anything but your company.
His smile makes my knees feel weak. God, why can't he be an asshole? This would be so much easier. Okay, then, I say, setting the bottle back onto the shelf. So what do you want to do?
Watch a movie?
He suggests. I nod. Actually, that sounds perfect. We've never done something so casual, so domestic before, and I like the idea of it immediately. We settle together side by side on my oversized sofa, cuddling together as the romantic comedy he let me pick begins. It's only a few minutes into the movie before I'm nestling closer to Emmett, increasingly distracted by the way he looks in his dark jeans and gray sweater, by the traces of his crisp, masculine cologne. Pressing my cheek to his firm chest, I let my hand wander to his flat stomach. My heart begins hammering away, and I hope Emmett can't tell that my thoughts have strayed from the screen and are now focused on the front of his jeans and the delightful bulge there. If I can't give my heart what it wants, at least I can give my body what it needs, and that's more of Emmett. I let my hand drift lower as I rub the soft material of his sweater. I venture lower still until I'm brushing the waistband of his jeans. Emmett tenses under my touch.
Want something?
I can't help the giggle that escapes. Jeez, sorry, I swear, I'm not normally like a 14-year-old boy. Emmett holds up both hands.
Hey, I'm not complaining.
I smile at him, feeling slightly embarrassed.
It's true about the increased libido, huh?
He asks. I nod. Yes.
I should get you pregnant more often. Who knew there would be so many perks in it for me?
It's the first time Emmett's mentioned continuing our relationship beyond this pregnancy. And for a moment, my heart jumps into my throat. Then I have to tell my pregnancy brain to calm down, because it takes me a second to realize he was totally kidding. Continuing with the task at hand, I pop open the button on his jeans and push my hand inside to find him firm and ready for me.
Damn, sweetheart.
He grunts as my hand moves up and down, and I love watching his gaze darken with lust.
Missed this,
he murmurs as he watches me slowly jack him off. Me too, I whisper. We kiss for a long time as I enjoy the solid feel of him in my hand.
Tender?
Emmett asks. He cups my full breasts, rubbing his thumbs over my nipples experimentally. I suck in a sharp inhale. Just a little. My body is changing. My breasts are fuller, and my clothes fit just a little differently. But so far, they are all welcome changes. The increased libido is a side effect I didn't know to expect. And the reason my what? Sperm donor? Friend? Baby daddy, I finally settle on, is here in the first place. After releasing the little buttons between my breasts, Emmett draws the top off over my head as though he's unwrapping a much-anticipated Christmas present. My bra comes off next, joining my shirt on the floor beside the couch. The movie continues to play on low volume, now completely forgotten.
Jesus, you're sexy.
He brings his mouth to my breasts, cupping them in his large palms and teasing me with his tongue.
I'll be careful. Go slow. Whatever you want, but please, God, I need to fuck you.
Yes,
I murmur.
While he strips off his sweater, I stand and push down my leggings and panties so I can step out of them. It's impossible not to notice the way his gaze darkens with lust at the sight of my bare skin. He shoves his jeans and boxers down just enough to free his cock.
You sure?
He asks, his dark eyes meeting mine. He's always this way, checking in and making sure I'm okay. But for the first time, it grates on me rather than making me feel safe. How can I tell him that no, I'm definitely not okay? I begged him for this, to put a baby inside me, and he did. but now I want things we both promised weren't in the cards for us. A relationship. Monogamy. Commitment. I want you, I say instead, because I do. He brings his hand between us, teasing me and no doubt finding I'm already wet for him. Then he kisses my lips. Deep, drugging kisses, sucking on my tongue, nipping at my neck as he continues to tease little circles over my clit. I reach down and find his cock resting on his belly. Using both hands to stroke his generous length, I return his kisses, teasing him just like he's teasing me. Enough, he says finally. Ride me. I want to see those gorgeous tits bounce while you fuck yourself on my cock. God, yes! Shoving my feelings aside, I angle my hips while he brings himself to the needy spot between my thighs. When did I develop so many big, messy feelings? Maybe being emotional is just another byproduct of pregnancy. Because right now, gazing into Emmett's eyes, watching him let out a low groan as I impale myself on his thick length, I'm struck by all the feels. His fingers grip my hips as he rocks into me. You feel? I suck in a deep breath, waiting. I feel what? Different? I ask on a moan. Tighter, he grunts, pressing himself deeper inside. Oh, right, because that's exactly what you want to hear when you're months away from squeezing a human being through your vagina. Soon I'm rocking up and down on Emmett's stiff length, losing myself to the pleasure. His hands on my hips guide me, slower than I would like. Normally we're frantic and hard and fast, but not tonight. He's being gentle, almost tender with me, and I'm not sure how to feel about that. Kiss me, I beg. He does, and it's everything. We make love for a long time, until he's coaxed two orgasms from me, and finally reaches his own climax with a groan. That was perfect. He presses a final kiss to my lips as I climb from his lap. Once we've dressed again, we make popcorn and restart our movie. We spend the whole weekend like that, painting the nursery, cooking, watching movies, cuddling, and making love. But we don't do the one thing I wish we could do. Talk about our future. I wish I had the courage to bring it up, but the truth is, I just don't. Not when everything has been so perfect. Every part of me wishes this could be real, but the coward inside me is fine settling for the scraps. On Sunday evening, we make homemade pasta and play a game of Scrabble. But when night falls, Emmett rises to his feet and kisses my cheek. I better get going, he says. I watch his eyes, waiting to see them fill with longing or reluctance or regret. But I don't see any of those things. Instead, he pats my butt and tells me to get some sleep. After I shut and lock the door behind him, I head to my bedroom where I promptly collapse onto my bed and sob. Wrapping my arms around myself, I lay my head on the pillow and cry for so long and hard that my breath comes in gasps and starts. Eventually, I cry myself to sleep, something I haven't done since the night my dad left when I was a little girl. Chapter 22. Jenna. After my weekend spent with Emmett, it's back to reality. My eyes are only slightly puffy from my sob fest last night, and thankfully Britt doesn't seem to notice. I've been staring at my computer screen for the last hour, trying to work up the courage for what I know I need to do. Slowly, my stomach churning, I dial the number that prick Ronald left me at the bottom of all his relentless emails and letters. After months of refusing to dignify his offer with a response, I can't deny the truth any longer. My little store is failing. It's been 2 years, and I've barely kept my head above water, let alone grown the Lit Apothecary into a successful business. In another universe, I might keep fighting until my last dollar evaporates. But here and now, with a baby on the way, I have no choice but to grow up. I won't watch my savings dwindle much lower, and I have to make the responsible decision and go back to my old, unfulfilling but reliable job.
My future family will need a steady income, no matter how much it hurts to give up the dream I've cherished for over a decade. I tamped down my wounded pride and pressed the call button.
Baxter Books Acquisitions Department, this is Cheryl. How may I help you?
Chirps a young female voice.
Hi,
I reply, wishing I was doing literally anything else. Like maybe getting poked in the eye with a sharp stick.
Can I speak to Mr. Ronald Hollenbeck? Who may I say is calling?
She asks.
Jenna Porter. I want to talk to him about... I swallow the knot in my throat. Selling the Lit Apothecary.
After a brief pause, she says,
I'll transfer your call.
Thanks, Cheryl. As miserable as I am, I can't hold this against her.
You're very welcome. Have a nice day.
A click follows as she puts me on hold. I'm afraid that's impossible, I mutter into the brief interval of empty static. I wonder if Cheryl even knows who I am. I don't know which is worse, my pain being common knowledge at their office, or the thought that I might be just one insignificant drop in a sea of faceless deals. Soon, a nasally male voice answers with,
Ronald Hollenbeck speaking.
God, he sounds even more obnoxious than I imagined. I repeat my reason for the call, each word a fresh little stab in the gut. At least his tone isn't too smug when he says,
I can set up a meeting as soon as tomorrow at 9. Does that work for you?
None of this bullshit works for me, but I guess it's better to rip the bandage off as quickly as possible and get it over with.
Yes, I can do that, I reply. I make a mental note to call Britt and ask her to watch the store while I sell it out from under us.
Fuck.
Great,
Ronald says.
I'll reserve a conference room for us to discuss the sales contract. Just stop by my secretary in the morning and she'll direct you.
Okay, thanks. See you tomorrow.
I hang up and grab a pint of butter pecan ice cream from the freezer in the break room to try drowning my sorrows in sugar. As I turn into the parking lot the next morning, I realize that this is the same office building as the sperm bank. I got the address off Baxter's website at the last minute, and I didn't notice that the addresses were identical except for the suite number. But I'm in too much turmoil to care about the odd coincidence. I park and walk to the entrance, then pause, trying to will myself to step through those imposing glass doors. God, I hate this. I don't want it. I can't. I steel myself with monumental effort. There's no other way. I have to make this sacrifice for my baby's sake. I will not run away. I will not cry. Taking a deep, shaky breath, I walk inside to sell off a piece of my heart. I take the elevator up to the top floor and greet Cheryl, who tells me that Ronald, some lawyers, and the CEO will meet me in conference room 4. I go down the hallway she points toward and find it after only a few wrong turns. As I open the door, I scan the room, looking for a free seat while taking the measure of my negotiation opponents. A bunch of pasty old men, like I expected, except for... My heart freezes solid. No. No fucking way. At the head of the long, polished oak table sits Emmett. I almost stumble backward out of my heels. This has to be some cruel joke. Emmett's eyes have gone wide, too. What's he doing here? What the hell is going on? Before I can speak or run like hell out of there or do anything, a jowly man with salt and pepper hair walks through the door behind me, blocking my escape route.
Ah, Mrs. Porter, you're here,
he says. I spin around.
I'm Ronald. It's nice to finally meet you in person. I admit you're even prettier than your voice suggested.
He chuckles as if he said something incredibly clever. I finally fight off my discombobulation enough to mumble,
It's Miss, actually.
Really? I find that surprising. Anyway, let me introduce you to our fine legal team and, of course, our CEO, Emmett Smith.
He gestures to a very surprised-looking Emmett. Our CEO. No. This isn't a nightmare. I don't know how this is happening, but it's real. After all the sweet days and passionate nights we've spent together,
Now I discover we've been mortal enemies the whole time. The father of my child, the man I've fallen in love with, runs the company that's been trying to pick over the carcass of my fondest dream, and I somehow had no fucking idea. Am I an idiot? Am I insane? Ronald waits for a second, then realizes I'm not going to respond and clears his throat.
We have a fine offer for you. We're willing to offer you a very generous price.
One of the other men slides a sheaf of papers across the table.
Please let us know what you think.
Numb, I stare blankly at the contract. The insultingly low figure on its front page slaps my eyes again and again. I glance toward Emmett, who just sits there in total fucking silence. Why isn't he saying anything? Why is he even here? I'm going to scream and jump out the window. No, I'm going to keel over and die right where I stand. No, I'm going to puke. Oh, shit. I really am going to puke. Without sparing a glance at the cluster of shocked businessmen, I bolt out into the hall and barely make it to a bathroom before I'm throwing up. Hollowed out, I cling to the cold toilet, trembling. Someone knocks on the door.
Jenna?
Emmett calls. Go away, I mutter.
Jenna, are you okay?
I said fuck off, I yell, my voice cracking. Tears overwhelm me in a rush, and I curl up into a miserable ball, racked with the all-out sobs of a child. For uncountable minutes, I cry into the silence. Just when I start to think he's left, Emmett asks,
Can I come in?
What the hell do you think? How could you do this to me? My voice rises, and I should be worried that the whole office can probably hear me. But I'm so far gone, I don't give a shit anymore. Was this your plan all along? To put a baby in me so I couldn't fight back?
Of course not. He sounds appalled. I had no idea you owned the Lit Apothecary.
Ronald was the one who handled this whole deal, and all you said was that you were in antiques and collectibles. I don't respond. What words could possibly fix this? Eventually, Emmett says so quietly I almost miss it.
I'm sorry, but please think it over. We really need this deal.
I stand on shaky legs and go to the sink. I take my sweet time cleaning myself up. Trying not to look at my red, puffy, tear-stained face in the mirror, I turn on the faucet and drink from my cupped hands to wash the acrid taste out of my mouth. Only then do I reply, Bring me the contract. His footsteps recede, then return. He knocks again, and this time I open the door.
Here,
he says, holding out the papers, a glimmer of hope in his desolation. I take the packet without letting our fingers brush, then staring Emmett square in the eye, I toss it into the toilet. I don't give a fuck what deal you really need. We're done. Turning my back on his shocked expression, I leave Emmett and his godforsaken vulture of a company far behind.
Chapter 23. Emmett. Still reeling from the truth, I dismiss Ron and my legal team back to their desks and shut myself in my office. The image of Jenna's face, outraged, betrayed, wounded, is seared into my mind. I had no idea she owned the downtown location we're trying to buy. I barely understand how this all happened, let alone know how to repair the damage. I desperately need advice, and at this point, it's way too late and too difficult to explain this whole complicated story to my family. So I call the only person in my life who already knows. Hey, man, how you doing? Jesse answers after a few rings. Pretty bad, to be honest, I say as I pull at my tie. Do you have time to talk now? A faint creak resonates over the phone, probably from him leaning back in his desk chair. I shouldn't, but I've been beating my head against this case all morning, and I need a break anyway. What's up? I take a deep breath and let it out slowly, thinking of where to begin. Once I'm composed, I explain everything while Jesse listens patiently. The baby we made, the weekend trips we had, the tapas, the moment I realized it wasn't just sex, today. When I'm done, he lets out a long, heavy breath that mirrors my own. You're a total idiot. I know. I groan. I fucked up royally, and now I have no idea what to do. Is there even any way to fix this mess, or isn't it obvious? Get your ass over to her place right now, apologize like you've never apologized before, and tell her you love her. I blink. Love. He's right. I love Jenna. Shit. When did this happen? Why would she give a fuck how I feel about her? Why would she even listen to what I have to say at all? She thinks I've known about this since day one, but I was just as fucking shocked as she was when she walked into the conference room. You have to at least try. She thinks I knocked her up without telling her I was trying to drive her out of business, I say, spelling it out for him. Weren't you listening? If I were her, I'd slam the door in my face. It was all an honest misunderstanding. Incredibly stupid, but honest. Just explain yourself like you do to me and beg for another chance. You do want another chance, right? I rub my forehead. More than anything. Well, there you go. Even if she doesn't return your feelings, you can try to part on good terms, or at least non-homicidal terms. And if she feels the same, then it still wouldn't work. My career is in the way. I wouldn't be able to be there for her like she and the baby needs. Calm down. It's not like having two working parents will scar a kid for life. Sherry and I have, but having a CEO for a dad will, I almost shout. You don't get it, Jesse. This job eats families. I saw it happen up close when I was a kid. My relationship with Jenna would fall apart like my parents did, and I can't inflict that same pain on her. Wait, what? Jesse sounds totally bewildered. Is that why you think your parents were so fucked up? Baxter Books? He lets out an odd bark of disbelief. My jaw tightens. You're seriously laughing right now? I have a real problem here, dick. You're right. Your dick started this whole problem, remember? I'm not laughing. Sorry. Listen, I try not to psychoanalyze people, but clearly you needed some friendly meddling a long time ago. From everything you've told me about your parents, I think it's safe to say there was a lot more wrong with their marriage than just your dad's job. That's what Mom always blamed, I say. Dude, his flat tone packs a universe of impatient incredulity into that single syllable. Your dad was a self-absorbed, emotionally constipated douche-waffle who used workaholism to dodge his responsibilities as a husband and father. He hid behind that excuse to avoid his own family. Your mom did the same to justify having affairs all over the place, and right now, you're hiding too. Now wait just a, I retort hotly. I get it, man. Love is fucking terrifying. The urgent sincerity in his voice stops me cold. Pining and daydreaming hurts like hell, sure, but it's safe, he continues, every word punching me square in the gut. Confessing to Jenna means facing the possibility that she'll reject you, or that she won't, and then you'll have to actually be her partner with all the hard work that that entails. Hell, you'll have to be a father, too. But I promise you, there's no job more important or rewarding. I know you can step up to the plate, but you have to want to, and I think you're ready. I swallow hard but can't make it past the knot in my throat. Haltingly, I ask, are you sure? What if I ruin everything? You won't, he replies, firm and earnest. Just repeat after me. I am not my father. I can be a better man if I try. But what about, say it? Christ, fine, have it your way. Feeling like a dipshit, I quickly mutter his words back to him. Then I protest. But what about Baxter Books? We needed this deal to make our quarter. The company won't fall apart if you stop working crazy hours. And even if it does, it was always destined to die, and one man pulling overtime every week wouldn't have saved it. Learn how to delegate, for fuck's sake. Hire a new VP if you have to. I'm not saying it's effortless, but balancing a career and a family can be done. Just look at me, and your brother, and your sister. He pauses. Speaking of which, I should probably get back to this case. Okay, you gave me a lot to think about. Thanks for ignoring your work to talk to me. I really needed someone to have faith in me right now. Anytime, dude, he replies with a warm chuckle. Good luck. Just remember what I said, and let me know how it goes. I will, I promise. If you chicken out, I'll break into your apartment and punch you in the nuts until you talk to Jenna. All right, I get the message. Back to work already. I hang up and resign myself to a distracted workday of mulling over Jesse's advice. As soon as 5 o'clock hits, I drive to Jenna's apartment and knock gently until she opens up. But as soon as she sees who it is, she swings the door right back again. I barely catch it before it slams shut on my fingers. Wait, I plead. We need to talk. Please, just hear me out. Her eyes flash. Why should I? What the hell could you possibly have to say to me? The fury in her expression stings, but not half as much as the hurt and fear and knowing I caused it. I take a tentative step forward. First, let me say I'm so, so sorry. I never meant for any of this to happen. I honestly didn't know you owned the Lit Apothecary until this morning when you walked in. Everything we've done together, everything I said to you, I swallow hard. Everything I felt for you, it was all genuine. I never would have manipulated you into pregnancy just to drive you out of business. If she thinks I master planned this, then she truly doesn't know me at all. Even if you're telling the truth, it doesn't matter. Now she doesn't sound angry so much as weary. Somehow, I don't think you're going to withdraw your offer, so you're still trying to take away the business I've been dreaming of and slaving over for years. And the worst part is, I was going to let you. For the sake of my baby. Our baby. I look away in painful guilt. I have no idea what to say to that because she's right. All the apologies in the world won't change the financial reality. She needs the money, and Baxter Books needs her storefront. But I can't let it all end here. There's so much more at stake, so much more that I have to tell her. At last, I say quietly, Jenna? What? Her voice is flat and cold and has no fight left in it. Without breaking eye contact, I sink to my knees, kneeling directly before her. If groveling is what it will take, I'll grovel all night. Her eyes widen. What are you doing? Get up. I take her hands in mine, expecting her to jerk them away. She does flinch, clearly not expecting my touch. But she doesn't move, just fixes me with her knife-like gaze, braced and waiting to see where I'm going with this. Looking deep into her eyes, hoping against hope that my sincerity shines through, I say, I'm in love with you, Jenna. She blinks, opens her mouth, then closes it again. I know I said I wasn't interested in any relationship, let alone a serious relationship, and maybe it was true that day in the elevator when we first met. But the thought of going back to my old life without you, it's not enough for me anymore. I stroke her knuckles with the pads of my thumbs. To be honest, it hasn't been for a long time now. I've fallen hard for you. I want us to be together. Me, you, and the baby. And if you'll have me, I'm willing to do whatever it takes to win back your trust. Her eyes are shining and she swallows hard. But what about work? What about the offer? My feelings for you have nothing to do with work. Rip up the contract if you like. I love you. That won't change. Oh, Emmett. Her voice is soft, little more than a murmur, and tears fill her eyes, threatening to spill. I want to try, too. My heart soars. I leap to my feet, but before I can sweep her into my arms, she adds in a cracking voice, But it scares me. I know how you feel. God, do I ever. My heart won't slow down. I've never been so terrified in my life. I also know that we can do this together. She scrubs at her eyes with the back of her hand. How? I didn't plan any of this. I don't know what to do. Neither do I. But if we both want this, we can make it work. Remembering what Aubrey told me, I say, there are no guarantees in life. If you're afraid to try, you'll miss all the good stuff. Jenna chews her lip, her gaze both intent and fragile. What about the contracts we signed? The NDA, the waivers? I'll rip them up, I reply. We don't need them anymore. I want to be a good father to our child, and if you'll let me try, you'll make me the happiest man in the world. I pull her to me and hug her tight. She returns my embrace, then brushes her lips against mine in a feather-light, hesitant but unmistakably certain kiss. Show me, she murmurs. I return it with relieved fervor. The dance of our lips and tongues turns hotter, needier, as we cling together, until I lead her to the bedroom to demonstrate just how much I intend to love her from now on. Satisfied and damp with sweat, we curl up together, entwined amidst her tangled sheets. I can still barely believe that Jenna's given me this precious second chance. I close my eyes to savor her warmth, her feminine scent, the weight of her head over my still racing heart. But I open them again when she props herself up on her elbow to face me, a somber turn to her full mouth. "Listen, about Baxter Books offer," she begins. I shake my head. "It's your store. You can do whatever you want with it. I won't push you one way or the other." She glances away, worrying her lip. "I admit, I'm struggling here. I have no idea what I should do. Going back to my old job is the responsible thing to do, but I've worked so hard on the lit apothecary." "It's okay," I say, wanting to reassure her. "Take the deal, don't take it, whatever is best for you. Just don't do something you'll regret." I stroke her cheek with the back of my fingers. "We'll figure it out, together. It's your choice, and whatever you choose, you can rest assured that I won't let you be unhappy. Tell me you want the moon, and I'll pull all the strings I can to make sure you get it." Slowly, she nods, happiness blooming on her face. God, I want to see that heart-swelling smile every day for the rest of my life. "All right," she says. "Thank you." "Of course." I lean up to kiss her, slow and gentle. She murmurs against my mouth. "I love you." My stomach somersaults at her declaration. "I love you too," I answer, my voice thick with emotion. She sighs. "Say it again." I obey, punctuating each repetition with a peck on her cheek, her lips, and her forehead until she giggles. Sitting up in the bed, Jenna tugs the sheet up to cover her beautifully full breasts. Then she says, "Let's go out to eat." "All right," I say with a chuckle. "Any opinions?" "I want..." Her brow furrows in concentration and confusion. "Pickles, but also cheese and maybe chili peppers." "Weird." I laugh. "I see you've hit the pregnancy craving stage. Well, how about we go back to Comal de Belen for some Mexican food? They can definitely handle spicy cheese and maybe pickled veggies." "Where we had our first dinner date." She grins at me. "Perfect. And you can tell Tomas you're finally settling down." "Oh, God," I groan. "He'll just find something else to hassle me about." Still teasing each other gently, we get dressed and head out to dinner. Chapter 24. Emmett. 7 months later. "Don't push yet." I take Jenna's hand and give it a squeeze. "You can do this, baby. Just a little bit longer." "Are you fucking kidding me?" she snaps back, her voice sharp. Jenna rarely swears. I hate that she's in pain, but I force a pleasant smile onto my face, doing my best to keep calm. If I stay calm, maybe she'll stay calm. "You've got this, babe. I've never been more sure of anything in my entire life." "I don't know, Emmett," she winces again. "Just a bit longer. I love you so much." I'm trying to put on a brave front, but the truth is, I'm about to fucking strangle the anesthesiologist. He did Jenna's epidural an hour ago, but she's still in pain. The labor and delivery nurse is trying to be positive. She adjusts the stirrups where Jenna's feet currently rest and looks at the door again. The door flies open, and in strolls the OBGYN, who's on call. Finally, he looks winded, like he ran here. "Sorry, folks, I hear we're ready to have a baby." Jenna groans, and the nurse chuckles in an attempt to soothe the situation. I won't be at ease until Jenna feels better. I can't handle seeing her in pain. "Can you do something about her pain level? I thought the epidural..." The doctor waves me off. "Nothing I can do now. Everyone takes to pain meds differently. But the good news is, we're about to get the show on the road." Once he washes his hands, the young doctor sidles up to my wife's vagina, and I have a moment where I want to punch the motherfucker square in the jaw. "Beautiful. Fully dilated. Nicely effaced. Let's get this baby out, shall we? He grins, and Jenna offers him a weak nod. I lean down so my face is near hers. Sweat dots her upper lip, and I dab at it with a cool washcloth. This is just you and me, babe. We can do this. Are you ready to meet Chloe? The name we picked for our little girl almost brings tears to my eyes. It's either that or the way Jenna's determined gaze locks with mine as she gives me a firm nod. She looks resolute, strong, like she can do anything she sets her mind to, and I'm certain she can. Let's get this damn thing out of me, she says, groaning. I press a kiss to her temple and hike up one of Jenna's knees while the nurse does the same with her other leg. Now, can we just press pause on this lovely, barbaric adventure? Because it should gross me out, right? I should be repulsed and utterly distraught by the fact that my wife is about to squeeze something the size of a watermelon out of her lovely, tight kiwi. That should be a moment I want no part of. The thing is, I'm so overcome with emotion, love, elation, pride, that tears are freely streaming down my cheeks as I watch her grunt and push and shout out obscenities. And then the doctor is saying something about crowning, and my gaze lowers from Jenna's face to her nether regions, and yeah, it's like a fucking bloodbath down there, like there was less blood at the Red Wedding and Game of Thrones, and I probably shouldn't have looked, but I'm full on crying now at the sight of my baby, our baby, emerging into this world into the hands of the doctor. Luckily, Chloe's wails drown out my own. I lean down, burying my face in Jenna's neck. We kiss and cry and hug as they whisk the chubby pink baby away to wipe her down and weigh her. We did it, Jenna beams up at me. We actually did it. You did, sweetheart. And then when they place the tiny, soft little creature who has already stolen my heart onto my wife's chest, I'm hit with a fresh wave of emotion. How did I ever think that I didn't want this in my future? This is the best moment of my life, by far, and I know how incredibly lucky I am.
Chapter 25. Jenna. Motherhood is every bit as amazing as I thought it would be, and then some. Chloe isn't a dream baby. She fusses. She shits herself all the way up her back. She cries for no reason at all. But I love her more than words can say. She eats and sleeps and grows, embedding herself in my heart more and more with each passing day. And Emmett? He's beyond words. I never imagined having a partner by my side. Never counted on having his steady hand or sweet disposition to get me through the tough times. And God, it's everything. Part of me can't even believe that I ever wanted to do this alone. Sharing the joy, the sweet moments and the difficult ones, too, is the best part of my day. I fucking love my husband. And believe me, I'm no domestic goddess. Sometimes it's a wonder he even puts up with me, with my hormonal crying and love of wine and need for space. But he just gets me. And now things are about to change yet again. My maternity leave is almost over, and quite honestly, I'm itching to get back to work. Motherhood is amazing, and Emmett swears it suits me, but I'm eager to get back to my shop and a normal routine, where I shower before noon and don't have leaky breasts. The shop has never performed better. After I signed on to be part of Baxter Books, a marketing team came in and assessed my business, adding layers of marketing, PR, and advertising support. Sales have been through the roof, but I've had to take Britt's word for it. Honey, I'm home. Emmett's voice calls from down the hall, and my heart swells. My everything, my rock, he's home. In the kitchen, I call back, tossing a container of button mushrooms into a sauté pan drizzled with butter. I wanted to make everything tonight special, this last night of my maternity leave. I have steaks marinating in the fridge, and a bottle of Merlot open and resting on the counter. Chloe is enjoying some tummy time on a nearby blanket in the living room, and her last bottle of the night is heating. What's all this? Emmett asks, stopping to give me a kiss on the back of my neck. I was thinking we'd have a nice dinner together once Chloe went to bed. Emmett smiles at me like he approves of this idea.
I hoped to be more put together than my usual ponytail and yoga pants by the time he got home. But hey, the house is picked up, and more importantly, I've showered and shaved my lady bits. I think that's a win, because dear God, it was becoming a jungle down there. The first time we attempted sex after I had Chloe was a disaster. It was so bad. So painful and awkward with my breast milk oozing out and Chloe crying from the other room, that we gave up and avoided the whole affair for the past few weeks. But tonight, I'm done waiting. I want Emmett. Want to show him how much I love him, how much I appreciate him, how goddamn sexy he is. I'm going to jump my husband's bones. I just hope our baby cooperates. Emmett grabs two wine glasses from the cabinet and presses a kiss to my cheek.
I'm impressed. This looks amazing.
I place my arms around his shoulders, leaning into him, inhaling his scent and smile. I love you.
Love you more, he says.
After he releases me, he goes to gather up our girl. I could listen to him coo and talk to her in that sweet voice he reserves just for her all day.
Come here, princess,
he whispers as he lifts her tiny body up against his shoulder. Then he looks to me.
Should I give her a bath now?
I nod. And I laid out some pajamas for her upstairs. I smile as I watch them head up to her room. There's no one I'd want by my side more than Emmett.
Epilogue. Emmett. 3 years later. Race home and relieve the nanny? Check. Change from my business suit into clothes that I won't mind getting barf or dirt on? Check. Start a pot of soup for dinner? Check. Now it's time for the baby's late afternoon feeding. I swear you guys keep me busier than the office ever did, I say with a chuckle. While I wrangle Landon into his high chair, Chloe toddles off into the living room in search of something to play with. Or destroy. Our big black Newfoundland, Heidi the Second, is sleeping in the patch of sunlight by the bay window, but that doesn't last long. Chloe runs right over and yanks on her poor floppy ears. Be gentle, sweetie, I call out, maneuvering a spoonful of mushy peas into Landon's mouth. Chloe doesn't really listen, but the dog clearly understands that she's only 3 years old. As gingerly as she would handle her own puppies, Heidi bumps my daughter backward onto her butt and licks her face while Chloe screams with laughter. Despite Heidi's 100-pound bulk, I know my daughter is safe with her, so I let them roughhouse while I focus on trying to get more food into Landon's stomach than on his cheeks, his bib, my clothes, or the floor. Just as I reach the bottom of the baby food jar, the garage door clunks open, then shuts. I smile at the rattle of keys. Ever since I hired a better VP and reduced my hours to spend more time with the kids, I often beat my wife home from work. Jenna shuts the door, hangs up her coat, and toes off her pumps before walking into the kitchen to kiss me hello. How was your day? Great. How was yours? I reply, wiping off Landon's messy face. She heaves a tired but happy sigh. Crazy busy. We hosted a big reading and signing event this afternoon, so there was a ton of people, and before that we got in several boxes of new titles that needed shelving, but I can't really complain. Business is booming. I nod, pleased. I used my clout as CEO to negotiate with Baxter's other executives and nudge Jenna's sales contact to something more in her favor. So, although Baxter Books became its owner on paper, the Lit Apothecary was allowed to maintain its indie charm instead of becoming the faceless behemoth that Jenna had been afraid of. She runs its day-to-day operations, and it still specializes in antique and collectible books. In fact, it's doing better than ever, now that it can draw on the marketing power of a large media company. Are we still on to take a walk in the park in the morning? Jenna asks. As Landon squeals and thrashes his tiny arms in excitement, I nod. Sounds good to me. I poke Landon's belly, making him giggle. Jenna chuckles. We need to figure out where we're taking our summer vacation, too. It's a nightly dinner topic since we've yet to nail down a location. Jenna and I have already both arranged with work that we'll be gone for 2 weeks this summer, and we're looking forward to some time away with our mini people. Maybe the lava tubes of Hawaii? I say. She raises her eyebrows high in the pointed, "You better be kidding me," look I've come to know and love so well. "You are not throwing my children into a volcano." I wave my hand in surrender. "Fine, fine. How about camping? Maybe taking the kids horseback riding?"
"Horsey!"
Chloe screams from the other room, startling Heidi off her. "Oh no, now you've done it." Jenna lets out a mock groan. "We'll have to watch that horse show again tonight." I peck her on the cheek. "I take full responsibility, and I'll pour you as many glasses of wine as you want." "That reminds me," in a sultry undertone she murmurs, "are we still meeting for our appointment on Saturday night?" I wouldn't miss it for the world. I kiss her again, this one hot and lingering. It's been difficult to squeeze in sex between work, errands, and taking care of the kids, but so worth it. After 3 years and 2 pregnancies, Jenna is just as alluring as the day we met. Even more so, in fact, now that I've witnessed the miracles that gave her those stretch marks. Her body is so amazing, carrying our babies, carrying her through all of life's challenges, and I can't wait to see how we grow old and gray together. And our weekly date nights have definitely helped make sure we can stay connected and close. I add, "But if you'd rather check out the inside of your eyelids, we should cancel. I'm worried you're not getting enough sleep." "It's fine, darling." She smiles up at me through her eyelashes. "I want you too. I've been looking forward to it all week." "Oh," I grin. "Then your wish is my command." She gives me one last kiss, heavy with sensual promise. "Right now, my wish is dinner, a hot bath, and sleep." "Coming right up." I lift Landon out of his high chair and pat his back until he burps, thankfully not dribbling down my shirt. "I started some lemon chicken soup about an hour ago. It should be ready soon." "That sounds wonderful." Jenna walks into the living room and comes back leading Chloe by the hand, an attentive Heidi trailing behind. "You ready to eat, baby girl?" "Eat, Mama," Chloe replies as Jenna helps her into her chair at the dining table. Heidi lies down next to her little ward, ready to gulp down any scrap of food she drops. As I start ladling the soup into bowls, I look around my home, at my beautiful, smart, ambitious wife, and my 2 cute, lively children, and it strikes me that I've truly never been happier. This is a far cry from my lonely life in my penthouse apartment where every day was the same. Work, gym, sleep, and more work. Each day is different, and most importantly, it's filled with people who love me. Jenna leans past me to get our glasses and Chloe's sippy cup down from the cupboard. "What are you thinking about?" she asks. "How thankful I am that I met you," I reply. She pats me on the butt. "Same here." And I'm also glad that I step back to a less demanding role at work. I hesitate before adding, "Sometimes I still feel a little bit guilty about it, but I think it was the right thing to do for you and our kids." "And for you too," Jenna says gently. "You were never 100% fulfilled at that job. You're not a bad boss or a bad son if you don't sell your soul to the company. It's okay to take your own feelings into consideration and dial back on stuff you don't like in order to make room for what you do. You have a right to live a life you enjoy." "I know." I set the soup bowls on the table so I can hug her. Her warm scent lingers, and it instantly calms me. I still feel responsible for Dad's company. If I didn't, I would have found a replacement CEO long before meeting Jenna. But once I had a family, I was responsible for them, too. And in a weird way, that gave me the permission I needed to change my work life like I've always wanted to anyway. Falling in love with you taught me that. And I found my fulfillment right here as a husband and father with the people who need me most. I kiss her. And who make me happiest. Thank God for stuck elevators and beautiful, bold women who know what they want and cheesy spank bank slogans that make her laugh. Thank God for good Mexican food and babies who look just like their pretty mother and jobs that provide your paycheck but don't have to be your whole life. Thank God for my wife, my everything. Hashtag you spank it, hashtag we bank it. Hashtag you jack it, hashtag we pack it.
Up next, Bro Code.
I didn't mean to sneak a peek at my older brother's best friend. But when I catch him showering by mistake, I can't help but look. The guy is massive, and I do mean everywhere. We're all home to celebrate Dad's retirement as one big happy family. Except my newlywed brother's already getting divorced. My mom keeps asking why I'm still single, and most frustrating of all, Barrett Wilson is staying with us at my parents' home for the weekend. I've known Barrett for years, so why am I suddenly noticing so many new things about him? Like how big he is, and all that muscled skin and those sexy smirks? It's maddening. Worse than that, since he caught me looking, he uses every opportunity to tease me, handling that cucumber in the most lewd and distracting way when he's supposed to be helping in the kitchen, whispering that I could never handle a man like him. When I sneak into his room to prove him wrong, things go from crazy to downright sinful. And it turns out, Barrett's right. There's no way I'm walking away from this in one piece. Find out more and get your copy at www.kendallryanbooks.com/books/bro-code.
This has been Baby Daddy, written by Kendall Ryan, narrated by Sebastian York and Virginia Rose. Copyright 2018 by Kendall Ryan. Production copyright 2018 by Kendall Ryan.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.